Ishi Hashem. One of the signs that the Rambam says for an Abba is being in a state of daiga, a state of worry and concern. And the Pasuk says that when a person has worries and troubles of the heart, Yashchena. Pashup Shat means you should suppress it. You should keep it to yourself. Chazal, in a very interesting Gemara, Pesachas Yoma, Dafayin Hei, Chazal bring two opinions on how to understand the Pasuk. Polar opposites. On the one hand, Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Asi, Chad Amar, Yashchena Midaita. If you have trouble, if you're going through a difficult period, if a person is experiencing pain, say Yashchena. Push it out of your mind. Remove it from your thoughts. V'chad Amar Yisichena La'acher. The other opinion is Yashchena should be understood as Yisichena. Talk it out. Converse about it. Speak to someone about it. In Kohelet, in the third parak, Eis lachashos, ve'eis l'daber. There's a time to be silent and there's a time to speak. And I always wonder, Tisha B'Av morning, which one is this? Is this a time to be silent? Is this a time to speak? Is this a time for Yashchena, to keep it to yourself? Is this a time Yisichena, to talk it out? Psukim that we read last night in Megillat Eicha, Yeshu la'aret yidmu, Pasuk in the third parak, Yeshe badad yidom, the time seems to be very quiet, to not have so much to say. 1948, the Brisker Rav spent a Shabbos in Bnei Brak, and he came on a Shabbos afternoon to visit the Chazon Ish. And he walks in and he says to the Chazon Ish, Shabbos. And the Chazon Ish says back to him, good Shabbos. And the two of them sit down. And each one, out of cover for the other one, is waiting for the other Adam Gadol to begin the conversation. They're nodding at each other. They're sitting there and it's quiet. 15 minutes go by. Half hour goes by. An hour goes by. I saw this story in the writings of Rosham Shvajran. He says they sat silently for 4 hours. 4 hours, two Gadolim, just looking at each other. Needless to say, it was not that neither of them had prepared a Dvar Torah that Shabbos. They had what to say. And they sat there quietly for 4 hours. And at the end of 4 hours, the Brisker Rav got up. And he said again to the Chazon Ish, good Shabbos. The Chazon Ish said, good Shabbos. And Chazon Ish got up and he walked him out, escorted his distinguished guest out the door. Now, Halacha on Tishrei doesn't even allow us to say good Shabbos or good Vachas to one another. And unlike those Gedolim who had a lot to say and kept quiet out of respect for each other, we're not sure what we're supposed to be doing. We don't know what to say. We don't know what not to say. We don't know if we should say. Chodesh Av in the Sefer Yetzira, every month has an action. The action for this month is listening, not talking. Shmia. And yet, I think if we look what's happening in the world today, people are talking on Tisha B'Av. People are trying to find ways to say maybe less keynotes than maybe was traditional in the past. And to be Mekayim Mahalach at the beginning of Shulchan Aruch, which is better to say less with Kavanah than to say a lot without Kavanah. And it's a strange thing that we're trying to find the right words. The first Kina that we recite this morning begins with the word Shabbat. Based on the Pasuk of the fifth parak of Eicha we said last night, Shabbat Misos Libeinu, Nefach L'Evil Necholeinu. Shabbat Misos Libeinu, the joy of our heart is gone. Shabbat, it's silent, it's quiet, there's nothing to say. Our scroll translates, everything came to a standstill. There's a pause, there's a break. We don't need to talk so much, we need to think, we need to listen, we need to hear. There's a heaviness, Shabbat. Everything stops. But again, the minhag is to talk. And we need to understand why that reality has become our reality on Tisha B'Av. Bali Musar explained how Mantiki Adaber. Mantiki Adaber means that sometimes if I don't know what I believe and I don't know what to feel, so if I try to talk about the right thing, if I get involved, if I use the Koach HaDibur, which is life itself, then all of a sudden that thing which I didn't know how to relate to all of a sudden becomes real. When a person talks about tragic things as opposed to ignoring it, it becomes real. When a person engages difficult things, it becomes more real. becomes a part of one's life. He'emanti ki adaber. The Bala Mutra said when a person speaks in Yanei Amuna, he'emanti ki adaber. When I talk about Amuna, I come to believe things. And the same thing I think is true today. I think the reason that we're trying to speak is because we're so far from it that if we don't talk about it, we don't talk about it, we don't talk about it, we don't even know what's happening. And we hope, as almost a tefillah, he'emanti ki adaber. That Shoresh Dalet Beis Reish also means to guide, to lead. Yad Re'am Tachteinu, like David Melech says in Tehillim Mem Zayin. To be guided by our words. We don't know exactly what we're trying to say. And we're not even sure if we should be saying. But there's a feeling that I have to try to have a conversation. I need to talk, I need to listen, I need to think. I need to somehow figure out this balance of Eitz Lachshos, Eitz Lachaber, when to be silent, when to speak. Yashchena, Yisichena, to suppress my feelings, to talk out my feelings. It's a quiet day. It's a lonely day. It's a day where we're trying to say something. We're watching videos. We're listening to Shira. We're hearing commentary on the keynotes. But we have to speak, and it's an achrayas to speak, and it's an achrayas to listen. Reb Lezer David was a grandson of Reb David Lalover. David Lalover was a Talmud of the Chos of Lublin, a Chassid of the Chos of Lublin. And his grandson, Reb Lezer David, who lived in Eretz Yisrael, would go to the Kotel every single day of the calendar year. That was very much a part of his avoda, except for Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av, he wouldn't go to the Kotel. By some Jews, some Jews dafka feel so drawn to the Kotel, they want to be by the Kotel Ma'arabi on Tisha B'Av. So some of his own Talmid, the master, he said, Rebbe, you go all year. Tisha B'Av, you don't go to the Kotel. You don't draw close to the Makom HaMikdash on Tisha B'Av. So he told him, he says, every morning I go to the Kotel, and I say, good morning to the Kotel. And the Kotel says back to me, good morning. And when I go on Shabbos, or I go on Yom Tov, I say, good Shabbos. And the Kotel, so to speak, speaks back to me, Shabbos, good Yom Tov. He says, if I went to the Kotel on Tisha B'Av, and I told the Kotel, I had to have a conversation with that wall and tell those walls to tell that makom what I was really feeling on Tisha B'Av. And if I had to listen to what the Kotel said back to me, he says, I wouldn't be able to hear what the Kotel says back to me. Reb Lezer David didn't explain what he was going to say to the Kotel. He didn't explain what the Kotel was going to say back to him. But part of our avoda today is to ask ourselves, what would we say to the Kotel? Close our eyes for a second. Imagine we're standing a couple of feet, relatively speaking, from the Kodesh Kadashim, an opportunity to have a conversation. What would we say? What was he so scared to hear back from the wall? You know, we do that sometimes. Instead of being more straight and more honest, we put it onto something else. Then we talk about the Torah says this. You notice that? We don't usually say Hashem says. If you look in the Rambam in the Parashah Mishnah, the Rambam often quotes the pasuk and say, Hashem, Amar Hashem Yisbach. It's a little more real when Hashem says this to you as opposed to just a book on the shelf. So, in quotes, what does the Kotel, so to speak, say to us? What does Hashem say to us today? What was he so scared to hear back from the wall? What was he going to say to the wall? What was he scared to hear back from the wall? And I think to say it very honestly and very simply, the Gemara Pesachim tells us on Kuf Yud Gimel, Shlosha Kadosh Baruch Hu Sona. There are three people who Kadosh Baruch Hu despises. I can't even use the word hate, it's just too strong. There's three people who Kadosh Baruch Hu is really, really unhappy with. And the very first one on that list, Hamidaber Echad Bapeh V'Echad Belev. The person who says things doesn't really mean the types of things that he says. So if we were to come to the Kotel today, of all days, we'd say, Kotel, Beis HaMikdash, Shechina, whatever we would refer to it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we miss you so much. And we're so sad to see you in this fallen state. And we're thankful that we have a remnant, a little shayr is called the Kotel, to give us a place of connection, a trace of what once was. But Hashem, we really want something more, we want something different. And Reb Lezer David was scared that the Kotel was going to say back to us, are you being serious? Are you being honest? Is that true? spoke about this a little bit last night. Do we really want it? Is that true? Is it Echad B'Peh and Echad B'Lev? Are we saying the right thing because it's Tisha B'Av and it's the right thing to say? Or is it something that we actually feel? Chazal tells us in the Medrash that Mashiach is born today. Do we believe that? Do we know what that means? Do we think about that? Do we have an understanding of what that is? Moshe Weinberger, Meish Kodesh, shared. He said someone a couple of weeks ago came over to him and said, Rabbi, I'll be honest, I look forward to Tisha B'Av every year. Mr. Weinberger said, I look forward to Tisha B'Av. It's a strange thing. A little bit of a strange thing for a person to say. But Weinberger said, I also look forward to the Moed that will be in the future. I understand, Karalai Moed, we don't say Tachlin today. But a Jew doesn't look forward to Tisha B'Av. And he said something, and Weinberger said that after he explained himself, it really did resonate with him. He said, Rebbe, you know, Tisha B'Av, I look forward to Tisha B'Av because I feel like it's one of the only days of the year where we're actually honest. It's an honest day, and I look forward to that. He says, all year round, in my professional relationships, he says, I'm an honest businessman, but I'm playing a part, we're running about, we're doing our thing. He says, I look forward to Tisha B'Av, we can talk straight, we can be honest, we can ask ourselves real questions. We can make an honest cheshbon with the nefesh. We can be straight with the Kodesh Baruch, we can be straight with ourselves. And we have to ask ourselves today, are we prepared to have that kotel, or that conversation with the Kodesh Baruch about the kotel? Or is it Echad B'Peh, Echad B'Lev, which is one of the three people that Chazal painfully say, Kodesh Baruch Hu despises such a person. It's not true, it's not honest. Don't tell me you want the geula if you don't want the geula. People already have their post-Tisha B'Av vacations planned, booked and planned, and not all the destinations are Yerushalayim or HaKodesh. Let's be honest about that for a second. There were tzaddikim who lived. There were tzaddikim who understood every day of their life. They were really waiting. They were really ani mamim b'amuna shleim. When they said those words, it meant something to them. It really, really meant ani mamim b'amuna shleim b'viyas HaMashiach. They meant it. They said it. Rav Belsky, I saw in the biography that Archer put out not that long ago. Rav Belsky was a Levi, and Rav Belsky kept his harmonica close by his side. Musical person. Mamashul was dying days. Imagine Elvin Guzzleby is still walking around with a harmonica in his pocket. And Rav Belsky said, I walk around with my harmonica, I keep my harmonica close to my side, so that when Mashiach comes, I'll be ready to go. Played violin as well, I think. He said, I'm a Levi, I want to sing, I'm ready to go. It's not a joke. What if Mashiach comes and I don't have my musical instrument by my side? Okay, it's hard to walk around with a harp all day. So he took a harmonica by his side. Took a smaller instrument. But it was Metzias. Mashiach was Metzias to him. He walked with it. He lived with it. An iman of emuna shleima. Read how the Chafetz Chaim's son-in-law on the opening page of the Likutei Halachos, which is the Chafetz Chaim's collection of Piskei Halacha on the Maseches of Kodshim, read how he describes what Mashiach was for the Chafetz Chaim. It was a tangible reality every day of his life. It wasn't some far-fetched dream. It was something that he lived with. It wasn't Echad B'Peh, Echad B'Lev. And today is the day where we try to be honest. For a moment of the course of the day, to say, yes, after everything that we've gone through over the course of this day, an imam levun ashleim b'viyas Mashiach. I may not feel that same way tomorrow when I wake up. But for a moment, to be able to be honest with Kutcha Brichu, to be honest with the Shechina, and to feel the pain of the Shechina and Galus. And to say, Rabbeinu Shalom, we're coming to collect that which is ours. We're coming to collect the Geula. Chafetz Chaim himself used to give a mashal. He said, imagine, a poor person meets a big gevir, a wealthy businessman in the street. And he says to this fellow, he says, you know, I really need your help. I know you give a lot of tzedakah. I really, really need your help. So the gevir says, I'd be happy to help you. Come to my place of business, and I'll give you a check. I'll write you a check there. That's where I give tzedakah. I don't have anything on me to give you that's sufficient. Come to my office, 2 o'clock this afternoon, I'm happy to write you a large check. And so I says, thank you. The Gvir goes off to work later that afternoon, he's waiting, he figures this guy will be the first one there that afternoon. Doesn't show up. Next day, the Gvir is walking in the street, and again, this poor person comes running over to him, and he says, please, I'm begging you. I told you yesterday, I really need your help. My mamash needs your help. So the Gvir says, I was waiting for you. Come, again, come to my office anytime this afternoon. I'm happy to write you a check. Just come pick up the check. I'm happy. I'm more than happy to help you. And the Gvir and the poor fellow part ways. And the afternoon comes and he doesn't show up again. A third day, he's walking down the street in the morning on his way to shul, on his way back from shul. All of a sudden he's stopped by this fellow again. He's crying. The fellow's crying, please, I'm begging you. I mamish, I need your help. I'm so broken. I'm so desperate. I mamish need your help. And he says to him, the Gvir says to him, you're out of your mind. I don't know. What do you want from me? Come collect a check. What do you want? Come pick it up. You say that you need my help, and I'm happy to help you, but you're not coming to collect. Chavetz Chaim uses this as a mashal. We daven every morning. You just look at the lashonos that we use in Birchas Kriya Shema. We should be embarrassed. We beg HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shmona Esrei, Birchas Kriya Shema, Hashem. We want to live a life of Torah. Help us to... So Hashem says, great, so come to the Beis Medrash once in a while. How do you expect to get the Torah if you don't open up the Svar? Yes, for Yirat Shemayim, but then you do things which are contradictions. So how are you gonna collect if you're not showing up? You're begging, you're asking, and Hashem says, I'm happy to help you, but it's Echad B'Peh V'Echad B'Lev. Ani Mam B'Muna Shleimah. Is it B'Muna Shleimah? Do we feel comfortable saying those words? A couple minutes ago, we were just saying Brich Shemayim. The Tzaddikim were scared to say Brich Shemayim. They were scared to say Ana Avda B'Kut Shabricham. I'm scared to say that I'm an Eved Hashem. Because Moshe Rabbeinu, at the end of his life, is called an Eved Hashem. Am I an Eved Hashem? The Bial Rebbe used to say, on a Be'ino L'Mehevei, on a Be'ino L'Mehevei, in Aramaic, I want to be Avda Zekut Shabrichu. Halavai, I should want to be an Eved Hashem. But to say that I'm an Eved Hashem, when I still have all my backup plans, and I'm not fully invested, when I'm willing to settle today with a partial Geula, with a Shabbos Nachamu, with wipe away some tears, shake off some of the dust of the last couple of days. That's not animam and b'muna shlema. To settle on Galus as long as Hashem, as long as it doesn't get worse, we can, we'll rough it out a little bit longer. There's a Bava Chassid who went through the war, he was in Auschwitz, with Yeshua Wolf. And his Chassid said that he survived Auschwitz with the belief that Mashiach was going to be the one to take him out of Auschwitz. And he made it through the war with that belief that Mashiach's going to be, it has to be, there's no way this war can end with anyone other than Mashiach walking through those gates and taking us out of the town. And he said, you know when he broke down, you know when he lost it? You know when he collapsed and fainted on a day that was so joyous for so many others? The day that the Americans marched in and set those people free, whatever shreds of life was left in those few survivors. He said when he saw the American army, when he saw the Allied forces coming to his rescue, he collapsed, he fainted. He couldn't take it anymore. He said, I went through Auschwitz for 5 years to be greeted by American soldiers. He went through all of this for what? To be greeted by American soldiers? He wasn't an ingrate, he wasn't a person who wasn't grateful. But he wasn't willing to settle that all of this pain should be compromised at the end. For a bagel and a glass of orange juice. He said, I want the real thing. There's no backup plan. Mashiach has to walk through these gates and take me out of here. When a person lives with that reality, when a person can say, Animam Bahuna Shleva, that's the only way Tisha B'Av is going to end this year. It's not about taking a hot shower or getting back to music or a nice steak and a glass of wine, but to be able to say, Rabbeinu Shlomo, there's no backup plan. I'm not compromising. I'm coming to collect the check. I know it's in the bank account already. I just need to come and collect. The Tzaddik Gaon of Lublin writes in Tzitzit Tzaddik in several pieces. He says, when we daven so often, we daven with a backup plan. Rabbeinu Sholom, I really need refuah, but I also have a good medical team. And you should. Halacha says you need to have a good medical team. Rabbeinu Sholom, I really need parnasa, but I also have a pretty decent resume. Rabbeinu Sholom, I need geula, but I have survival techniques to make it through Galus. And Rav Tzaddik says we undermine our own tefillos when we doubt them that way. When even a little bit of a backup plan in the back of our mind, that if this doesn't work out, so here's plan B and C and D and E. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, says that, but you know what? I don't want to interfere with your plans. You have so many plans, I don't want to interfere. You know, it's okay, you don't need me. I see that you have all sorts of other plans to get you through. So it's okay. So you don't need my refuah, and you don't need my yeshua, and you don't need my parnasa. You go to your boss, you go to your doctor, you go to whatever quick fix gets you through another couple hours of galus. We undermine our own tefillos that way. We undermine our own kinos if we're not fully invested right now. Whether we say a lot or a little, but it has to be the kavanah shleila, to whatever degree we can, to go all in. They tell a story, they say it was a terrible drought. And the elders, the chachamim, that particular place, gathered together, they decided to call a day of fasting and davening. And they went out to the field where the animals were thirsty, and the plants were scorched, and they were mamash desperate for rain, and they go outside and they're davening, and they're crying, and they're fasting, and this one of the elders, one of the tzaddikim, took along his little son. And his father and son are standing there, and they're davening, and they're fasting, and they're crying. And the boy turns to his father at one point, and he says, "Dad, Abba, Tati, do people really think it's going to rain? The people are standing here davening, and crying, and fasting, and trying to do something. Do people really believe that it's going to rain?" So the father, of course, replied, "Of course. Look how everyone's davening. Look how everyone's fasting. Look how people are trying to shake the heavens. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent rain down. Look how thirsty the animals are. Look how low our water supply is. Look how dry the plants are. We can't survive. Of course people believe it's going to rain." So the little kid, as children are often more honest than adults are, the kid turns to his father and he says, "So why didn't anyone bring an umbrella? If everyone's so sure that these tefillos are going to work, so why didn't anyone bring an umbrella? If we're so sure Mashiach's going to come, so why didn't we bring our suitcase with us this morning?" When we hear that story, the Chafetz Chaim had his little suitcase packed under his bed. Okay, whether you have a suitcase or not, but to what degree do we believe this is a Metzias? To what degree are we ready to make this happen? Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us a Shabbos this year to lead into Tisha B'Av. The Halacha says that during the 9 days, a person has to be Mamasa Umasa. Which Halacha says, specifically, Masa Umasa and Shal Simcha, as most of the poskim say, there were poskim which took it much more literally, that a person shouldn't go to work for 9 days. A person shouldn't do any business dealings during these days. Rav Moshe Wolfson explains in his Sefer Emunas Yitzchak on the Mu'adzin, he says that based on the Gemara, perhaps in the Avodah Zarah and Daf Tes, where the Gemara says that as Mashiach gets closer, the real estate market is going to collapse. No one's going to want to buy anything. You know why? Because what do I need a big house in Bergenfield for? What do I need real estate in New York City for? It's not going to be worth anything. And therefore, says Rav Wolfson, this practice of being mamai, mamasa umasan, not worrying about unfinished deals, so to speak, at my office, is a way of saying, none of this really matters anymore. We're ready to go. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us an opportunity to practice that this year, because we all took off a day from work, Shabbos, no one worked, it's a chana for Mashiach, and today is Sunday, most people, Baruch Hashem, have some more time on Sunday. And that's a chance for us to invest more fully. To invest more fully in the possibility of going straight from here to Yerushalayim Yer HaKodesh. An imam in be'emunah shleima. What does it mean to have emunah shleima? To be fully, fully invested in something. We know about Noach, he's described by Rashi as ma'amin ve'eino ma'amin. There's a Messias called ma'amin ve'eino ma'amin. Where you believe, but you don't really believe. You almost believe, you sort of believe, you want to believe, you're trying to believe, but you're not ready to get fully invested. The way that a child says, "Where's the umbrella?" Everyone's davening for rain, so where's the umbrella? Maybe I'm a bad father, but I said to our son, we were in the car on the way home from carpool the other day. Yaakov's 3.5 years old. And he said, "Daddy, can put on Uncle Maishi," which is on constant play in the car. So I said, "No, Yaakov, we're not going to listen to Uncle Maishi's today." I mean, what normal person talks to a 3.5-year-old like this? But I said, "No, we're not going to listen to Uncle Maishi today because we don't have a base of Mikdash." So he was macabre that I was surprised, whatever that meant. You know, he didn't say, like, "Just put on Uncle Maishi. What are you talking about? Put on Uncle Maishi." 3.5 years old, what are you trying to say, Daddy? But I said, "No, we're not going to put on Uncle Maishi today because the Jewish people, Hashem doesn't have a base of Mikdash." yesterday we were looking, we were learning Mishnayos Midos. I was looking at a picture of Mishnayos and Sefes Midos, beautiful pictures of the Beis HaMikdash. And I was showing Yaakov, I was showing our kids pictures of the Beis HaMikdash. So Yaakov says to me, is it here yet? Is the Beis HaMikdash here yet? You remember the conversation we had in the car a couple of days ago. I said, no, but it's going to be here soon, very soon. Amir Hashem, very soon. It's going to be here very soon. Hashem's going to build this beautiful house, this Beis HaMikdash, very, very soon. So he says, yay, then we can listen to Uncle Maishi. Get back to Uncle Maishi. Maybe Karbanos. Maybe feeling a little Shechina in our life. But for a child, it's a tangible reality. Things change. Yeah, the Beis HaMikdash comes. Things change. Shlomo Karlbach told a story that when he was a kid, he remembers seeing his parents fast as a child on Tisha B'Av. And he said to his parents, why aren't you eating today? They said, because there's no Beis HaMikdash. He said he went to sleep that night, and he saw the next morning, after Tisha B'Av, his parents were eating again. So he said he came into the kitchen, he started singing and dancing. He said, if Ima and Abba are eating, it must be there's a Beis HaMikdash again. Why else could they be eating? Which his father then had to explain a little bit more, no, we're not quite there yet. And he couldn't understand, but you told me we don't eat. If there's no Beis HaMikdash, we don't eat. A Jew doesn't eat if there's no Beis HaMikdash. And his father, with tears in his eyes, said, when I was a kid, a similar thing happened with me and my father. I couldn't understand why my parents stopped eating. And when they explained it was close to the Beis HaMikdash, I could never understand how they started eating again afterwards. Children get it. Children are able to say with the simplicity, Ani Mam V'Muna Shlema. And our avodah today is to try, as we begin to recite the kinos, again, striking that balance between talking and listening, saying and not knowing what to say. Snaring me off our kumi, trying to pick ourselves up. Before we know it, it'll be chatzos, and things will start to change. But to try for a moment over the course of the morning to say, Ani mamin be'emuna shleim be'viyat ha-Mashiach, and to mean it. To really mean it, that it shouldn't be echad v'peh ve'echad b'lev. I'll end with one final story. B'chanan Wasserman was once sitting with a couple of his talmidim, and a woman walks into the room. A person was very clearly not all there, mentally all there, not a well woman. And she's crying, and she says, Rabbi, give me a bracha, I have a child who's sick, give me a bracha. She says to B'chanan, I need a bracha, I have a child who's sick, give me a bracha. So B'chanan, in his humility, says, who am I to give a bracha? I don't have the koach of bracha. I don't know how to help you. He says, go to tzaddikim, go daven. I'm not sure what to tell you. And the woman, not all there, says to her, it's so unfair. No one understands my pain. She says, if I could only go to the cemetery and daven at the kvarim of my parents. But she says, Nebuch, my parents are still alive. Nebuch, my parents are still alive. I have nowhere to daven, I have nowhere to go. Chanan is beyond words. The two talmidim start to snicker. An absurd thing to say, Nebuch, my parents are still alive? Nebuch, I don't have kvarim to daven, I have nowhere else to daven. And she's crying, and Chanan sees what a sick woman this is. What a deranged person this is. So he says, okay, lady, I'll give you a bracha. And he gives her a long bracha, your child's going to be okay, he's going to have a refuah, things are going to work out, it's going to be fine. Everything's going to be okay. And the lady thanks Rav Chanan and she walks out. And Rav Chanan looks at his talmidim and he says, it's so beyond me that you can laugh at a woman like that. Nebuch, the poor woman doesn't even know what she's saying. How do you laugh in her face? She's going through a tough time. She has no idea what she's trying to say even. How do you laugh at her? Okay, it's ridiculous. Of course it was ridiculous what she said. An absurd thing to say. But how did B'nai Yeshiva snicker in the face of a woman who's suffering like that? So I'll turn that into a tefillah for us. We're all a little bit shtickle crazy like that woman. We don't know what to say, what not to say. We don't know what to daven, what not to daven. But we say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we ask you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as we say words that we hope are true, Ani Mam B'Muna Shleim B'Viyat HaMashiach, we hope those words are true. We say, Hashem, please don't laugh in our face. We're going through a tough time. We're a little bit lost. We're not exactly sure what to do at this point. And the Tzivos Shalom used to have his fundraising meetings with his hanhala for the Slonimer Yeshiva. He said he used to end every meeting by saying, okay, Lamaisa, we don't see any hope. We're not sure exactly how the yeshiva is going to survive, but the Kodesh Baruch Hu helps people who are hopeless. That's our tefillah this morning. Shabbos, we pause as we begin the first word of the kina. And we say, Hashem, we're not even sure where to begin. We're not sure what to say, what not to say, which kina to skip, which kina to say. But we're going to try for a moment. Ani mamon b'muna shleim b'viyas HaMashiach. As some tzaddikim have pointed out, b'viyas HaMashiach is the gematria tafshin ayin ches this year. So halavai, halavai, our words should ring true in our own ears. Our words should be echa v'peh and b'leiv. It should be one and the same, not one or the other. And then b'viyas Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu won't laugh in our face. It's an arim yach for kumi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will pick us up off the ground. HaKadosh Baruch Hu mekabel our tefillos, our tears, our words, will be zochem yirtzeh Hashem to return to the Kotel, where we can face the Kotel, to look Kutcher Brichu in the eyes, so to speak. Zechazena inenu b'shukhu l'tzion b'rach.
Next kina, the refrain, Zachor Hashem Lo Yovonu. In the phrase, Zachor Hashem Lo Yovonu, the opening phrase of the fifth parak in Megillat Eichel. In Megillat Eichel, Zachor Hashem Lo Yovonu, most of Hashem explains to mean, Hashem, remember, look at what has happened to us. Look at what has befallen us. In the Paikon of the year, using the chorus and way alone a little bit different. The Alshach is pirished in the Megillah, he closes this pirish. Here we say the chorus and way alone with his brother, remember what we once had. Every paragraph, 11 paragraphs, describe first different parts of Klal Yisrael's relation with the Rosh Hashanah. Yes, the Troyim is the first paragraph. The Troyim is the first paragraph. Yes, the Troyim, the Mikdash, Har Sinai, Matan Torah. The Havtacha Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us and never leave us. The Shmiri gave us it. Yes, the Troyim was again Har Sinai and Mikdash. See, Zechor Hashem Vayolon, because we have to remember all the things that we had. All the different parts of our relationship. And that's one of the aspects of the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash doesn't represent, it is the relationship between Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. And that's we have to focus on in the course of the morning. The different aspects of the Beis HaMikdash. So when we have the Beis HaMikdash, so our relation with the Kadosh Baruch Hu continues. It's another piece of Yitzis Mitzrayim, and Har Sinai, and Rishmin Havsorim. Klal Yisrael and Kadosh Baruch Hu being able to be in the same physical place, Kilu, being able to bring Karbonis, being able to have prayers, Kadosh Baruch Hu will answer. And I was thinking that, when do we say Zechor Hashem, when do we say to each other, Neho Yomar? I think very often, when a couple comes to discuss some of the difficulties they're having, maybe a problem in Shalom Bayis, and we have to figure out what's the nature of the relationship. We have to figure out how we're going to maybe rebuild, we have to figure out if there's promise in our relationship. Very often after hearing the difficulties, the aggravation, sometimes the disconnect that the couple have. So I would ask them, tell me about the good times. So I want to understand whether they're seeing sometimes years of being together in the light of the difficult time they're going through now. Well, what is the emes different? Trying to give a different, what's the emes looking perspective? They described to me how you fell in love with each other. Described to me the vacations you have. They can't find good times. So it's a very, very dismal forecast. But on the other hand, if they come back and they say, sure. Sometimes I'll find out that they're right at the time, 75% of the time they're good with each other, happy with each other. And they allow the difficult times to describe their relationship in a bitter way. And sometimes it's a small and fleeting parts of their relationship, which sometimes it's charisma, sometimes it's a very, very specific part of their relationship. So we say to Kadosh Baruch Hu, Zechor Hashem Vayolon. It comes to Tisha B'Av and we spend time thinking about the Beis HaMikdash and that we there's a disconnect, we've distanced ourselves, but it's such a promising relationship. Zechor Hashem Vayolon. We look at our relationship, there's Yitzis Mitzrayim, there's Mikdash, there's Mishkan, there's Sinai, there's things that no other nation has. So, on one hand, that makes the relationship be so promising. That means that we'll get over this. That means there's so much to build on. There's so much to believe in. And that's true, and that's an emphasis. But at the same time, when the couple remembers how good the times that they had together were, then how more painful it is when they can't recapture those times. The world has a phrase that there's no such fury as a stir in love. That's what this pious story of Kalir is portraying for us now. On one hand, we have to see inside it a robust and promising relationship and now in a passing period of time. On the other hand, We have to see ourselves in the disconnect. We are spurred lovers, and the aggravation and the pain in that projects upon us.
So the refrain in this kina is miyitein. Miyitein roshimoyim is oyin miyitein. Eshkan miyitneini. Aroshem miyitneini. Akonin miyitein. Efe miyitein. The phrase miyitein, we know what the phrase means. Klal Yisrael once said, "Miyitein l'singu b'yad Hashem, there is its joy." If only God, and let us die in Mitzrayim, we wouldn't have all the difficulties we're having now. Miyitein l'chol ha'om l'neviyim. Moshe Rabbeinu says, "What I would give to every member of Klal Yisrael to be another." Kadosh Baruch Hu says, "Miyitein l'choyot l'lavom zelem l'yiroi." The Rabbi Kiviyachol says that I would give that everybody should have Yerushalayim. So Meyitein means what we would give. As Oyin Meyitein Roshimayim. What I would give to be able to break down and try that a Bechi Shatinam and a Bechi Shalemet. Ashad Meyidneini Vaminbor. What I would give to be able to redo things. The couple has hit difficult times, so advice is hard. And each one thinks, I could have done things differently. I would have seen where we're heading. Me eating. What I would give to be able to do things. Many people the years go by, the mihiten, what we would give to be able to have a few more minutes to be able to recapture some. That's what the Python leads us through now. It's called the Tzayach HaDinyan. To be able to imagine. Me is any Shomer B'Shayas. We will give to be able to have the tools to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. Me Yitain Yodati V'em Se'eli. We would give to be able to hear Kadosh Baruch Hu say, I'm giving you courage, I'm giving you strength. We would give to be able to have certainty of our prayers being answered. This is Beit HaMikdash. We would give to be able to feel that the Baruch Hu is the Yedidus of the Kadosh Baruch Hu in the closest. And he was leading us through the various machshavas we should have as we contemplate the abode of today. Adelchum shemayim aleichi shemoyim goyim lechum shemoyim esedei mitim shemoyim akum lechim alim verim barbchan aruyel amin barayim goyim akiti yel shem yinimim amin goyim. Next kino wraps around two texts. The text is the second parak of Eichot is Arti Mirah Shoyisah Yishlichu. How could my glory be thrown down from the top? And the second text is the text of Bechol Koyisah, the Tevacha. The Tevacha at the beginning begins with Suki Brocha. And the parasha in which the Tov was found, the Chukwaisai, first tells us in the Chukwaisai Telechu, so then it is broken with the Tzadik Yishvechem Yitom, Zayishim Bosh, so the how you done, go step by step, and first moan that we would not deserve to have the bracha, and then further on, he details how we have seen so much of the Sefer itself. So we begin with the pasuk in the seventh parak of Eicha, and the substance of the tina is to say that through the goals we've seen, the unraveling of the brachos of the transition of the Sefer. It begins with the tif'aret tihir, the Beis Hamikdash is referred to as tif'eres Yisrael, the glory of Kal Yisrael, tif'er. We refer to our tefillin as tif'er. The Gemara Menachi says, "Rom kol ami ha'aretz kol tefoshet b'shem Hashem Yisrael." That's why Chizkiyahu refers to the tefillin as tif'er, chamosh tif'er. That's why first day of Avelus, person doesn't wear tefillin. We feel that we've lost our tif'er. We've lost kol ami ha'aretz b'shem Hashem Yisrael. He's lost. Everybody looks at Kal Yisrael and sees the Rebbe Mishal. Eicha Tefarti. We have the Beis Hamikdash. Everyone would look at Eretz Yisrael to Kal Yisrael to Ibn Baruch. We have the Beis Hamikdash on the Melech's time. The kings of other nations came and took advice to counsel the Son of God. The leaders of other nations would come and bring Korbanos to Eretz. That's seems that the Shvarku reveals himself through Klal Yisrael. That's what we had the first moment of Mashiach that Klal Yisrael had was after that at the Yamsa. That's what in fact we said that came to the Yandeim. First time the Shvarku revealed his plan to Klal Yisrael. So we're going to have a Beis Hamikdash. And say, Kaili, Vandeel, Ezeth, Nod, the Royal Megom. At Fierce Yamsuk, that's when all the nations of the world recognize Klal Yisrael. That's Oz, the Bo, Lupe, Eve. Kaili, Mor, Yechadem, Rosh. That's the parents. That's what they see. Klal Yisrael is broken, and then we have come. We, the Erantin, we see forms of that Tiferet. We see the building of Klal Yisrael after the Korban. Everybody has to see the Tiferet, the Klal Yisrael. We see the Kibbutz Goliath in Eretz Yisrael. It has to be a form of Tiferet. See, there's the Er Anton there to go on. Those of us remember 67. Those of us who remember Jews coming back Eretz Yisrael from the Soviet Union, that's the role called Ami Arat Yishem Hashem Nikra. We see moments of Tiferes. The Beis HaMikdash is ongoing Tiferes. We also see the exact opposite of Tiferes. When the nations of the world get together, the United Nations, even though we know how transparently poised to again Eretz Yisrael, but that's still there isn't a strong voice that's supporting it, supporting the state of Israel. That's the reverse of that. And we see in Da'vei'enu that Jews aren't trusted the way Jews should be trusted in the business world. That's the reverse of the terrorists. The reverse of Rokhul Amrit Hashem Hashem Nikon. Kalir is pointing out that Tiferes can be seen through the Sefer as well. Because when it's when we are observing to the Baruch's laws and the Sadiq is Mechemdi Tom and the country is flourishing, the Tzilichem Daish is Botzi and the crops export all over the world. The Nasati Shalom Barak, the wind will be peace and Eretz Yisrael, so then that would be the Baruch revealing himself. And then So here it says that sometimes the Baruch Hu speaks the world to the Tefillin. And again, through Klal Yisrael to them. Because when he sees the Sukkim of the Chumash come alive, even in the most painful way, and then in the very, very painful way, is also to bear us. And also to the Baruch Hu walking with Klal Yisrael.
Thank you.
Chatzelus Hasharon, the certain flower of the Sharon, and the Chazal says Chatzelus, the reason why the Beis HaMikdash is called Chatzelus is because it's a play of words in Chavuya the tail. I don't know if the particular flower that's referred to was one that thrives in the shade, but the Beis HaMikdash is referred to by Chazal Chavuya the tail, tucked away in the shadow, in the shade. The Nefesh HaChayim, kind of a legend to point out, other rabbis as well, that the tail is a particularly important metaphor for the relation with Tal Yisrael and Bishbaro, because we create the tail. The shade that we create is stronger when we are closer to the light, and if we get in the way of the light and interfere with it entirely, then the shade is very strong. And if we are far away from the light and we let it impact us in some way, then the shade is much less. We can make our shade larger and our shade smaller, our shadows. And the Shechayim says that's our relation with the Rebbeinu Shalom. And the degree of discussion, the degree of connection we have with the Gorkhu, so we are in control. And the way that the Gorkhu relates to us, whether the Baruch Hu was a long protecting shadow of us, or the Baruch Hu was minimally felt, the Baruch Hu shadow was strong, it all determines how we relate to the Rebbeinu Shlomo. So that idea is captured by the Beis HaMikdash, captured the Binyana u'l'churbana, captured whether we had a temporary Mishkan, we have a thriving Beis HaMikdash, where there is a place that Kali Yisrael comes easily. All has to do with the way that the Beis HaMikdash can represent our relation with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. This particular Tina focuses on the Koyanim. Every paragraph of the Tina describes a part of the unraveling of us being in Eretz Yisrael. We don't have previous advisors. We have described the killing of Zachariah Novi. Describes the paths towards the Beit HaMikdash. They were not well trod. Describes how he went taking care of the poor. So all of this is then associated with a family of Goyim. And every paragraph ends with a reference to one of the 24 families of the Goyim that Shmuel and David and Melech developed. And the key to one is directing us to appreciate is that the Goyim were our connection to the Beit HaMikdash. We so often we point out in the Shir that the system that the Baruch Hu gave us is a system that the Kohanim would spend 2 weeks in the Beit HaMikdash. The balance of their time, since they Kohen Yishmu Das, they would be the teachers. They would go from place to place to pick up their true Etanas. So when they would come from place to place, we would engage them. They had a lot of crops. They could come in one day. And it come to take several days to pick up and package the true Etanas and pack it up and take it back. So the Kohanim were all over Eretz Yisrael. We speak about this in Shur, we often point out that in the panorama of Rebbeim and Rosh Hashivas is why you had the Sukkah decoration pictures. The problem of Shem Shkoptin is that the problem of Shem Shkoptin is why you, and the Rosh Hashivas brought them. But he had to raise money, come to America to raise money. In those days, you could not fly in and fly out. You couldn't come for a weekend. You couldn't come for 2 weeks. You had to come and spend time from place to place. When Rosh Hashanah was in America, he spent time trying to raise money. So he had a place to discover, to learn from. So he landed at the Y and gave Shira. Chaim Vassin, he came there to America, he gave Shira. The Shmurl system of sending Talmidei Chachamim around the world, so that's is Rachel's way of connecting Klal Yisrael back the hard times to place the Torah, the Golem, the learning. It was the system of connecting every Jew to Beit HaMikdash. Koyin, even before Matan Torah, Koyin, Yisrael, Koyin, Midyan, connect the world to the Rosh Hashanah. So Koyin's job was to find his place throughout the land, picking up tumors and rice and leaves, and to create a connection. And the Kohen and the Kohen didn't practice their roles properly. They had the Mishkan Shiva. And then the Kohen lost their role. Instead of the Bechor, lost their role in Chet Egel. They didn't create the right connections to their Rosh Hashanah. This particular Kina built on a midrash that as Tisha B'Av was progressing, the opponent took the keys of the Beis HaMikdash and they said, we haven't done a good job of watching over the Beis HaMikdash. We haven't done a good job of connecting the Jews to the Chorash and Moriah Lomu, connecting the Jews to the Beres, connecting the Jews to Chavetzelus, and to the Yosel, and connecting up and accepting the keys. The Kina of our disconnect, the Kina of the responsibilities of Koyin and leadership, and when Koyin and leadership are unsuccessful, then the Echrayas that they have to take is a tzara in the Gracias. The next kina, as we just said, by Yikoinen, Yiriyo, Yirishiyo. The next kina is the kina which Kalir imagined Yiriyo would say for Yeshua Melech. One of the Prokim of Eichel was originally a kina for Yeshua Melech. And we've often described in the past, and I'm sure you remember the story of Yeshua Melech, and how he turned Klal Yisrael around, how he got rid of the Avodah Zarah throughout the land, how he was upstaged by a group of people who were stubbornly held on to the Avodah Zarah and able to put them at the back of their cabinets and resisted the inspections, the anti-Avodah Zarah inspections that Yeshua imposed. And as a result, Yeshua was mistaken in thinking that he had cleared the land of Avodah Zarah. Yeshua warned him that it's not the case. There is no Avodah Zarah. Yeshua Melech is not listening to Yeshua and does not allow the Egyptians to take their bath, may take their armies through, because he interpreted the pasuk that when times of Mashiach, and he thought we were zocher for that. Then he made the mistake of listening to the Navi, and in his last breath he recognizes Kipir Mariz, Yitzadik Hashem, Kipir Mariz. I'm going to focus just for a moment on the different angle of the king of Yeshua Melech, the point of the Emek Brocha. Emek Brocha was Ayolei for Manshek and Talmud Briskerov. He points out that in Divrei HaYomim, when the Navi describes Yiriyo's Kina and Yeshua Melech, the Gemara says that since Yiriyo made a 22 posuk hesped to the death of Yeshua, he pushed off the impending Korban for 22 years. The impact of Yeshua Melech is Mayala Mayaber, the idea of a tshuva movement, the idea of being able to just turn the tide of Klal Yisrael. And then he actually did give us another opportunity for many, many years. The pasuk in Divrei Yomim, when it describes the kina, the eulogy, that's what it says, by Yitna Lachok Al Yisrael, he made this for Elan Al Yisrael. And Rashi says, an explanation that phrase, that whenever we have a Torah, and we get together, we take the Hillel, we get together and we daven and Kabbalah, whatever we do, we're supposed to say Hesped for Yeshua Melech. And the Brocha says, I'm surprised that this does not become the practice of the Pasuk. So he said, after he looked around, he found that Vayitna Lachok Al Yisrael is interpreted by a minority view that it is referring to giving his faith, to give his faith. That's not that the Yeshua thing. Rashi is very clear. They were supposed to have penned a hesped for Yeshua Melech in all difficulty. What's the hesped over? Why should we, so long after this event, and even when it was an unsuccessful event, you think it is the follow-through of the previous kina? The previous kina refers to the failure of, by a failure of leadership. So this kina reminds us how tremendously impactful leadership can be. And one person, one Yeshua Melech, one child king, 8 years old, can turn around an entire nation, can reverse the course of so many other kings. When you think about the observance of Tisha, the fact that we are sitting here this morning, one person, Yeshua Melech Soloveitchik, before the Rav explained Kino, Tisha B'Av was come to Shul. The rabbi was kind, he selected 12 or 15 kinos to say. He wasn't so kind, and he had all the kinos. In an hour, 2 hours, they're done, they route. In fact, at that time, most students went to work on Tisha B'Av. It was, no one thought you could make Tisha B'Av into the day that people would get together. No one thought that you could explain the kinos. The Rav Soloveitchik began, he was the only one, he had a box of
explain the keynotes and read and explain the keynotes before 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And then people start. You can explain the keynotes. And Jews want to say the keynotes, they want to listen to the keynotes. This will change. The whole, to truth is Israel. Every place. I'll be increasing majority from other issues and people's movement. Everybody doing this was a much more meaningful way. One person had faith in Klal Yisrael. One person had faith in the text of the Kadmonim. So I think that's what this Kina is saying. That's what the Anigroch is pointing out. That's what Rashi points out. Both Sarah, every time there's a Sarah, you have to remember that there's one Jew to make it in. One leader can exist. That's an important part of moving problems forward. Eichel ikan no meilo tishvene shol eichel mishvene yishvene 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 yishvene
There's a large black fellow standing on the side crying like a baby. The Levi above the Rebbe wasn't wearing a yarmulke. He didn't appear to be a convert. Seemed a bit out of place. And this fellow, Yossi Chesnik, goes over to him and he says, I have to just ask you, what are you doing here? Rabbi Rebbe was a big person, he touched a lot of people, but there must be a story here. So the fellow tells him, he says, 25 years ago, I began my career as a painter. I paint homes. That's what I do professionally. And he said, one of my first jobs, I was invited by the Bava Rebbe to paint his home, the Shlomo Albershtam. He said, I came to the Rebbe's home that morning, and the Rebbe says to me, did you have breakfast this morning? Did you have a chance to have breakfast this morning? So he said, I figured the Rebbe's going to say, you know, if you didn't eat, I'm not in a rush that you start right now, there's a diner across the street, whatever, go find something to eat. Which would have been nice, that he even asked the question. So the fellow says, no, the truth is I didn't really have a proper breakfast this morning. So the Rebbe says, okay, great, wait right here. And the Bava Rebbe goes to his kitchen, to his fridge, he starts pulling out Chol Yisrael cottage cheese. He's putting together a whole platter for this fellow. And he knows he's a big rabbi, he knows the Bava Rebbe is not a regular person, he's very taken by it. Sensitivity, his generosity, he sits him down, he gives him some juice, and he gives him something to eat, and he's taking care of him. And he's blown away by the sensitivity of this human being. And the fellow began his work that day, the preliminary work, preparing the home for painting. Comes back the next day, walks in, and the Bava Rebbe says, before you begin painting, I just want to say something to you. I just want to let you know something. And in some small way, I guess he had forgotten the kindness and generosity of the Bava Rebbe from the day before. He figured, okay, here comes the speech, you know, I'm paying top dollar, I want a good job. Make sure you get every little nook and cranny, you want any sloppy work. And the Bava Rebbe says to him, I just want to let you know that the job really doesn't have to be perfect. Who tells a worker who's about to paint their home, don't bother making it perfect? So Rebbe says to him, he says, you know, we Jews, once upon a time, had a temple in Jerusalem. It was mamish, it was perfect. It was a perfect place. The structure, the design, the beauty, the splendor, the tiferes that Rabbi Neuberger was describing before, the Beis Hamikdash is referred to, an illuminated place, the ruchnis of a gashmias, a light that has shone out to the world. And the Bava Rebbe said, we don't have that temple anymore. And ever since that temple was lost, there's really nothing in the world, there's really nothing left in the world that's perfect. It doesn't have to be perfect. Your paint job in my house doesn't need to be perfect. The fellow was very taken by it, it resonated with him in a deep way. Obviously he did the best he could to paint the Rebbe's house. He said a few months later he was hired by another rabbi. He had some other jobs in between. But he was invited on a different occasion, hired by another rabbi. And he's surprised, he shows up the first day, he figures he's going to get a nice breakfast. No breakfast. Comes back the second day after the preliminary work, he's ready to start painting. And the rabbi says to him, before you get started, I just want to speak to you for a moment. So he's thinking, the fellow's thinking, I know, the whole spiel, you know, the temple. And the rabbi says to him, you know, I just want you to know, I'm paying you top dollar. I expect the corners to be just right. And make sure your drop cloth is big enough. I don't want any splatters on the floor. Make sure you clean up after yourself. Make sure everything that you do here is the way that it should be. As perfect as it can be. And this fellow, this black painter, says to this rabbi, he says, Rabbi, I just want to let you know. You Jews once upon a time had a temple in Jerusalem. And Bava Rebbe told me that the temple was perfect. I never saw it. I don't know when it was. Maybe you saw it. I don't know. But the Bava Rebbe told me it was perfect, and he told me that after that temple was destroyed, nothing needs to be perfect. And he's standing there at the Levi, the Bava Rebbe crying, 25 years later. This black fellow standing on the side, crying like a baby, this is Yossi Chesnik described. And he says, and that's why I'm crying, he says, because this rabbi was my rabbi. Saying, oh, the Bava Rebbe, this rabbi was my rabbi. And as if to further prove the point, he reached into his wallet and pulled out a picture of the Bava Rebbe. His painter carried on a picture of the Bava Rebbe, that lesson that he taught him. The reminder that this world is far from perfect. We sit here on a day like Tisha B'Av thinking about how much more perfect the world would be if we had a mikdash. It had to be a mikdash. It wasn't just, like Neuberger alluded to, it wasn't just a place where Jews gathered. It was a place where the nations of the world recognized Hashra Tashchina in the world. Let's forget for a minute or two. Let's forget how perfect. Perfect's a hard thing to think about, to even meditate upon. What about normal? Is our world normal without a Beis HaMikdash? Can we say that our world is truly normal? Does it make sense? Is it normal? Does the world function properly when there's a Klal Yisrael that doesn't have a Beis HaMikdash? I think a lot about a story that one of my Rebbeim, Rav Moshe Weinberger, from Eish Kodesh, shared on numerous occasions. He told it to our Shir in YU several times. He said when his only son became Bar Mitzvah, so he took him to get a bracha by the Deber Tzinarot. Rav Moshe Stern, one of the great poskim from Hungary, survived Bergen-Belsen, came to America eventually, had a kehila, author of the Shalos and Tshuvos Be'er Moshe, many volumes, very, very interesting Piskei Halacha. So he took us to the Deber Tzinarot to get a bracha. And like any good father who wants to get a nice gesunta bracha for his son, so he says to the Rebbe, he says if we can have a bracha for my son should become a Talmid Chacham, and my son should have Avos HaTorah and Yiras Shamayim, and all the lashonos like we have in Birchas HaChodesh, and all the right from things to say that a person should want. Even if a father wants his son to be a good basketball player, you don't ask the Rebbe for a bracha for that on the occasion of his bar mitzvah. So he asked for all the right things. Madrega. He should be a Bal Madrega. So Deber Tzinarot closed his eyes and he put his hands on Rwanda's son, Oshi. And he said, I want to give you a big bracha that you should be a normal mensch. Be a normal person. The Weinberger is waiting, and, normal a mensch, and finish out 50 times, and daven long mishmor esrei, and have sterling midos, and never be nechshol in any taivos. No, that's all bracha. Should be a normal a mensch. I give you a bracha, should be a normal a mensch. Normal person. So Weinberger, I don't know if he said something openly, or just his body language showed that, that wasn't really what I came for. Looking for something perhaps a little bit more, he said, what about everything else? What about all the other madrigals? What about all the other aspirations that a father has for a young son who's entering that stage of his life? And he said to Deber Tzinarot, Moshe Stern looked at him with his piercing eyes, and he said to Weinberger, and Weinberger always does the voice, in a deep voice to Deber Tzinarot, he said to Weinberger, he said, Kuli hai v'ulai, halavai your son should be known. Halavai yisam shabino. As time unfolds, as we move through Galus, and we see how abnormal the world is, and we think about the Baba Rebbe describing the Mikdash as a perfect place, we could use the Mikdash. Forget perfect, we could use normal. Halavai, we could have the base of Mikdash to just normalize the conversation in the world. The types of things, I'm not giving examples because we don't need any examples, everyone knows countless examples of just how crazy our world has become. But to just have normal. If Shimshon Pinkus gives a mashal, one of his svarim, he says, imagine a town, people go to sleep one night, they wake up the next morning, and it's pitch black. It's morning. And an hour goes by, a couple hours go by, and it's pitch black. The sun didn't come up that day. Can you imagine? And waking up one morning and it's just pitch black, the sun just stopped, didn't happen that day. Take it for granted that the sun comes up. So they called a meeting of all the town elders and rabbanim, and everyone's trying to figure out what are we going to do. The sun's not here, okay. Nope, life must go on. We have to find a way to compensate in whatever small way we can for this terrible loss of light. And they begin, they start lighting candles all over the place. To try to give light. And candles give light. Some light, and lanterns, and candles. And they're devising the whole system, you know, if the sun never comes back, what are we going to do? They're making plans. And that's how it went for weeks and months and years. Children who were born after that tekufa, says Rapinkus in this mashal, who had never seen the sun, thought this was normal. This is how much light one can expect in their life. Some candles, an oil lantern, a little lamp. So says Rosh Hashanah Pinkus, imagine one day someone comes to town. Someone who has figured out the secret of electricity. He puts the generator in his backyard. And all of a sudden he starts turning on lights, light bulbs. Imagine a fellow even more simply comes with a flashlight. They've never seen a flashlight. And the children turn to their parents and grandparents and say, wow, look at this. This must be what the sun was like. Look how bright this is. Imagine a couple of light bulbs. Look how, wow, look what a difference it makes. Look how bright our room is right now. We have 40 light bulbs in here. Unbelievable. Couldn't pull this off with 40 candles. This must be what the sun looked like. And needless to say, the Zikne Hador remembered the sun, what the sun actually looked like. They broke down, they started to cry, and they said, are you crazy? This is nothing even close to what the sun looks like. This is not even a poor comparison for the sun. The sun was infinitely brighter and stronger and warmer and enriched life in such a different way. Don't confuse yourself and think that this is the sun. Rosh Hashanah Pinkus says, what was it like the morning after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? And so to speak, that source of light of the world, out of those tiny windows in the Beis HaMikdash. Chazal say, the light of the menorah was literally lighting up the world. What was it like to wake up in a world of complete darkness? And how much worse is it to forget just how bright that world was? And to convince ourselves that the small little glimmers of light we've sustained ourselves with through Galus, and again we appreciate those things that Hashem has given us to stay afloat, but we're still living in the dark. We're still mamish living in the dark ages. I mentioned last year before this kina, Revolbi in the Ali Shor quotes from Rabbeinu Tam. In the first volume of the Ali Shor on page 297. He says that life without a mikdash, Rabbeinu Tam said that living in a world without a Beis HaMikdash is like living in a dark cave. We read a lot about that recently, those poor kids in those caves in Thailand. And the challenge of adjusting to the light coming out of 18 days in a dark cave. How do you survive in pitch dark? It throws off the whole body. Forget the lack of oxygen, the lack of food, the lack of water. But being in darkness is an illness. It can create illness. Emotional illness, physical illness. And therefore we remind ourselves when we're setting these kinos, we just pause for a moment to remind ourselves that Hashem, we at least deserve normal. This isn't normal. Life in the dark or life by a couple of candles is not a normal way to live. We wouldn't say that a person today who lives without electricity is a fully civilized person. That's not normal in the world today. There are people who still unfortunately live in such societies. But it's normal to have electricity. There's certain normal things that we take for granted. The picture of the Beis HaMikdash of Geula has to be something that's not only a perfect world, like the Bava Rebbe described, but just a normal world. And that's not my own assessment, that's what the Navi Zechariah tells us. The Navi Zechariah paints a picture of Geula, and the picture is so plain, it's so normal, it's so regular. The Navi writes, Kol Amar Hashem Tzvakos. Od Yesh Muzakeinu Muzakeinos Berchodes Yushalayim. This is the picture of Geula. Remember the first time I heard someone point this out, I was so taken by it. This is the picture of Geula. They should have Bubbies and Zaydis sitting in the streets of Yerushalayim. V'ish Mishanto Biado, the elderly should have their walking staffs, their canes in their hands, their walkers in their hands. Mirov Yom, because they've lived a long, beautiful life in Yerushalayim. A Bubby and a Zaydi in a coffee shop on a corner in Yerushalayim. Urechovas ha'ir yimogu yolazim yolazim. And the streets are safe, without any fear or any threat. 200 missiles fell the other week. What that means for one Shabbos, 200 missiles here? How many missiles would America tolerate before they retaliate? Imagine one missile came in from Mexico. Imagine one missile came in. And it's always, you know, my colleagues, it's always show restraint. What are we asking for? What's our picture of Geula? What are we asking from our enemies? What are we asking from Kutcher B'Yichu, Lahavdol? Kol Amar Hashem Tzavakos, Hashem, you promised us. The Jews should be able to walk in the streets. The kids should be able to play in the streets. Rechovat ha'ir yimalu yaladim yaladim misachim rechovat ha'ir. That young boys and girls should be able to go out into the street. That's geula. That's what the Beit HaMikdash, a certain security of the Beit HaMikdash afforded Klal Yisrael. We said last night in the third parak, v'tiznach mishalom nafshi. My spirit despaired from shalom. There's a loss of shalom in my life. Nashisi tova. I've forgotten what good is. I forgot what regular good is. Forget perfect. Says the Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Chafei. What's the Pshat of this Pasuk in Eicha? Shabbos Chafei Amar Biz. My v'tiznach mishalom nafshi. Sounds very broken. My spirit is the spirit of peace. Says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Abba, Zohar Lachas Ner B'Shabbos. If you're able to light Shabbos candles, then already, Baruch Hashem, you have Shalom, and Chazal talk there, obviously, in the Sugya there in Shabbos Chafei, Shalom Bayis, Mitzvah Lachas Ner Shabbos. That's it. V'tiznach mishalom nafshi. My soul has the spirit from peace. What do you need to solve that problem? Shabbos candles. Be good, sounds like a Lubav Trevi's campaign, you know, handing out Shabbos candles on the corners. Nashisi tov, I forgot what good is. Amr b'yirmiya, zubeis amerchas, able to take a bath. Zurechita zedayim v'raglayim b'chamin, hot bath, washing your hands and feet with hot water. Revitach nafa amar, zumita na, v'kelem na, inshallah. A properly made bed. That's what we're asking for. It's so regular, it's so normal. Well, Chazal, in some way, are hinting to, and Sfarim describes it this way, is that yes, I want you to think of Mikdash, I want you to think of Geula, I want you to think of the opposite of Eicha, of a redeemed world, and just having all the normal things. And when you realize that we're living in a time that's not normal because we don't have those things, it changes the conversation. If we think we're longing for perfection, if it seems like big madrigos, if we ask the Deborah Tinerel, Yerushalayim, and Gans Shas, and Madregos, so take the tzaddik to remind you, Kuli Hai Hu'ulai should be a normal mensch. Having Beis HaMikdash is normal. Pesach is only normal if you have a Beis HaMikdash. Yom Kippur is only normal if you have a Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, with this I conclude, perhaps, it's not entirely my own idea, when we eat, when we have a meal, we eat some bread, we bench, or even less than that, we have a couple of cookies, a bowl of pasta, a couple of crackers, and we say an Ala Micha. It's a very fascinating thing that we do. You would think that's normal, eating is normal. What normal person doesn't eat. That's a normal part of life, it's as normal as it gets, it's as regular and mundane as it gets. But what do we do when we eat those crackers, and now we're saying Ala Micha? We're not just saying thank you, Kodesh Baruch Hu, a couple of crackers, or a couple of cookies, or a slice of bread. But all of a sudden we up the ante, significantly. We say, Kodesh Baruch Hu, you know, thank you for the crackers, thank you for the cookies, thank you for the bread, thank you for this delicious challah. But Ribbono Shel Olam, if we're already talking, and if I'm already thanking you for normal things, so then Ribbono Shel Olam Rachim Na, maybe have a little Rachmanus on Yerushalayim, on Tzion, on Mizbechecha, on Hecholecha. That's also normal. That's also not too much to ask for. The same way I expect the Rosh to supply me with a slice of bread, give me my parnasa, I should be able to eat, to survive, until you created me, Rosh Hashanah. Of course, without the Chai, you made me exist, so I might as well have some food, but then I might as well have a Beis HaMikdash. I might as well have a Mizbech, I might as well have a Heichal, I might as well have a Yerushalayim, where children can sit in the streets, and Klal Yisrael can have that security. And again, that's what we say, and that's what we think about in these kinos. The Kodesh Baruch Hu, restore that ohel, restore that ha'atah ha'sharon, give us back that place of just normalcy, that headquarters for all of humanity to be able to get back to normal, and Amir Tashem from there to come to that ultimate level of perfection, of how we should see it with our own eyes. Ali asher ta'asta, dobereshit, in kisei kabal b'sarfa, lama l'netta, shudah bi'atcha
Kino puts the Beis HaMikdash in the context of Riyas HaOlam, very similar to the Avodah of Yom Kippur in Nusach Ashkenaz, that begins with a description of Yom Kippur Avodah with the creation of the world. And Ad said at the very beginning, this kina asher ad shel ishchokim nimtochu v'sheli ramaz v'or toisa so, that the not only was binyan Beis HaMikdash part of a central part of the design of the world, but v'or toisa so, by mentioning that the world was empty, that's a way of indicating that the time we will not have the Beis HaMikdash. And similarly, in the second paragraph, Bonoi v'chori v'bonu v'achris, that the Beis HaMikdash was built and destroyed and built and destroyed and will be rebuilt again. So Kadosh Baruch already put that into the template of the world creation, because Medrash says that our world is the seventh of the world that God created, the world that He destroyed. And even if one doesn't refer to the Midrashim, but the world as we know it encompasses earlier times that are no longer extant, whether it's cavemen or whether it's dinosaurs, just one digs deeper and sees that the natural world itself includes within it boni v'chori v'boni. And that may refer to the the way Kadosh Baruch Hu made us, and sometimes, as we mentioned in Shabbos, we can become so used to, so feel so entitled to the greatest bracha that Kadosh Baruch Hu can give us. Sometimes we discussed yesterday the Chen and Raglan, and it's true with the Beit HaMikdash itself. So Kadosh Baruch Hu sometimes has to impose different forms of goals. And that's part of the Bria the Baruch Hu put into place. I think there's a deeper idea that is being expressed when the Python points out that the Beit HaMikdash is essential to the world. Because the truth is that the core of the Beit HaMikdash defines the Bria. The Kodshei Kodshim was a place where Chazal explained to us that the Oron Letofas Mokin, that you would measure the space between the Oron and the side of the Kodshei Kodshim, you'd come up with 5 amas. And if you measure the space from the other side of the Oron, you'd come up with 5 amas. So Letofas Mokin, it's a fine physical measure. We know that Klal Yisrael's experience in Mikdash was that the Mokoyim Amuot Tafas Hamruva, that it was a place that always accommodated more than it could accommodate. That's the, when we're introduced to the Mishkan in Chumash, Hakel is Koloeda. So Rashi says one of the places where a place encompassed much more than it physically could accomplish. It could accommodate. When we went into Beit HaMikdash, the experience was Oimdim Bitzufim Umishtachim Archova. We would stand squeezed, shoulder to shoulder, out into the space. So it means that every Jew would go home from Beit HaMikdash and say, it doesn't make sense. I don't get it. If there wasn't enough physical space to bow down. You know about that? We came to Yerushalayim, I've been described, so Mishan Ovi says that the only Omer of the person never said Tani Mokin. It means that we know how much square footage Yerushalayim encompasses. We know how much square footage you need for millions of people. And the numbers didn't make sense. The Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us this experience. This experience is part and parcel of Mikdash and Mishkan. From the Kodshei Kodshim, the way that every Jew was introduced to Mishkan and Mishkan. Why? So the cook points out because the Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to introduce to us the idea that we live in a world that connects the Gashmi and the Ruchni. We live in a world that connects the physical and the spiritual. The spiritual means that it defies physical rules. A different form of space. There's no way that the human mind can appreciate. There's no way the human mind can elaborate, can articulate that there is that you can be in this world and yet defy the physical product of this world. You have to experience it. And you have a kasha, and you live with a kasha, and it makes no sense. But of course says, that's what would explain to us, that Kadosh Baruch Hu moleh ha'aretz kvodo, that the physical and the spiritual world can be connected. Ultimately, that's what we say every single time we see a shiyotar, rafeichol vosor u'mafli la'asos. There aren't many brachos that are interpreted with the Pirush HaMilim that's said in Shulchan Aruch. So this is one case where Shulchan Aruch says, what does it mean? Rofeichol Bosar, Umafli Lasa, and he done wondrous things. So the Pshat should be, in Baruch Hu Benzi Rafuas and Yeshuas, and there he is. Umafli Lasa, it's true. And that Baruch Hu would have made our bodies different. Yeshu Amad would have Afilu Shoacha, Umafli Lasa. Shulchan Aruch says, Umafli Lasa, is that Baruch Hu connected in the Shulchan Aruch. And we are the composite on the Shabbos. Do we have a koach inside of us that that defines the physical housing? So we say it every day, and we experience it from time to time, and we see individuals from time to time that exceed in their abilities and in their ruchnias beyond what we think is physically possible. But the Beis Hamikdash was a place where this emes was there, where a person would go to Beis Hamikdash in a Yom Tov for a Birchus Kohanim, for a Korban Pesach, and it became the truth of the Ruchni and the Gashmi of the physical spiritual world being housed together. It didn't have to be articulated, it was the truth of the living. So I think that's what the Pisan is pointing out, that as God was creating the physical world as we know it, God was creating a Beis Hamikdash at the same time. Something which doesn't make sense, we can't articulate it, but it's the truth of the world, and the truth that once a Jew is aware of it, then he looks at the world in a different way. And that's what the Beis Hamikdash provided for us, one of the great sodos he provided.
Yeah. Shuvah koytin damir humar lik vishecho, ve'inat otor, v'alir kon shecho,
שלחוש מתושף אי כוי כי יחד מביאים שלאים איך עוד ויתן להם לתאר על נבי תלם איך ואין התורה שובירי שושום איך עוד ותחילה לו משכן שמח ואי כוי שימן שויף ותארץ כוי תעשה שיש עשיום ויחד וכוי ולורת ואין התושם טוב ובוארץ צריכו כמוי זה ילורת אי כוי דשור הייתה סלום אי אוי תבכל אוי אמר שלחוי דדות אין התותו וכמור חלפה תאים ואין לכם אמית אלוהו The next kina is kina Tet Zayin number 16, and it flows from what we just completed by saying, by referring to the Vayechol Be'ez Tzor. No. And most of the king Yechorev Tzor. For how long will the enemy curse us? And now we refer to the Tzor B'finim, that Titus made into the Kodshi Kodshim. And in the indescribable Bizyonos, disgraceful acts in the Kodshi Kodshim. And I mentioned this last year, probably a year before, that when I think of the Chorosh also Tor Mefinim, I remember the words of the Beis HaMedrash that the Rabbi Yaakov Glasser wrote to say, expressed after the massacre inside the shul in Har Nof, that when we feel that a sense of protection, whenever we are in the close precincts of the Baruch Hu, we feel a sense of protection in the shul. And when we read and thought about the massacre in the shul of Har Nof amongst such a vibrant Beis HaMedrash, so we felt the Chomer Sher Oso Tzor B'finim, with a sense of being totally exposed. So you can imagine if Titus could do such such despicable acts in Beis HaMikdash, how exposed Klal Yisrael felt at that time, how lost they would feel. And that's a sense that we're supposed to conjure up in our own minds as we say this kina.
Shame them, call the old Vishal, the Azir, the Shilkom, the Evans, the Shilkom, the Azir, the Shilkom, 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 the Shilkom,
very well done. Do it.